Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings on a constitutional amendment to nullify recent Supreme Court decisions and restore Congress's power to regulate campaign finance. Jamie Raskin, a professor of constitutional law at American University's Washington College of Law, who testified in favor of a constitutional amendment, joins us to discuss his Senate testimony and the political polarization surrounding the issue of money in politics, where in the last 4 years the Supreme Court has opened the floodgates to unlimited and unattributed money in politics that has mostly benefited Republicans. Then, with the German parliament announcing it will investigate the NSA's tapping of Chancellor Merkel's phone and a recent BBC World Service poll on public opinions in 24 countries that found views of the US had deteriorated sharply among citizens in Spain, Germany, and Brazil, where extensive US surveillance activities have been exposed, we will examine the rising global cost to the United States and to US businesses from the Snowden leaks with Danielle Kale, a policy analyst at the New American Foundation's Open Technology Institute. We will discuss her article at CNN, A Year After Snowden, The Real Costs of NSA Surveillance, and how much U.S. economic interests have been the real casualty, while most of the focus has been on the trade-off between individual privacy and national security. Then finally, we will speak with Bill Lester, a professor in the Department of City and Regional Planning at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where he researches the impact of minimum wage and living wage policies on urban economic development. We will discuss the passage of a new $15 minimum wage law in Seattle, Washington, and assess its national impact as more and more cities and states push for a higher minimum wage and demonstrations by fast food workers intensify while the federal government remains paralyzed with its minimum wage stuck at $7.25 an hour. And joining us now is Jamie Raskin, who is a Democratic state senator in Maryland, representing Silver Springs and Tacoma Park, as well as a professor of constitutional law at American University's Washington College of Law, where he directs the program on law and government and its Marshall Brennan Constitutional Literacy Project. On Tuesday, he testified before the United States Senate Judiciary Committee in favor of a constitutional amendment to curb political spending. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jamie Raskin.
I'm delighted to be with you guys.
And I take it that the first part of the Senate hearing on Tuesday was largely a battle between Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid, the majority and the minority leader of the Senate. And then later, you and other state legislators also testified along with the First Amendment constitutional lawyer Floyd Abrams. So can you
actually, it was Floyd Abrams and myself to testify on the constitutional questions. I was there in my capacity as a law professor, not as a state senator. There was a state senator from North Carolina who had come to testify about what the impact of Citizens United has been on the politics of his state.
Where a plutocrat, Art Pope, has pretty much bought the entire politics of North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, the Senator McKissick described a pretty dramatic transformation in the politics of the state, where the infusion of millions of dollars by one extremely wealthy individual was able to turn lots of legislative districts, infect judicial elections, and then undermine the voting rights of the people through a set of legislative measures undertaken to make it far more difficult for people to vote and to register to vote.
But in terms of the theatrics, if you will, of the between the majority and the minority leader, obviously in an election year, that's to some extent to be expected. But what do you think the subtext is cutting through the idea that the Republicans are talking? I mean, Ted Cruz went into hyperbole overdrive talking about book burning, the idea that this is an issue of freedom. And on the other side, the Democrats are basically talking about the Koch brothers buying our politics. But it does seem that it's pretty clear that the recent Supreme Court decisions have really helped the Republicans enormously compared to damaging the Democrats. I mean, that's an objective reality, isn't it?
I think there is empirical basis for that. The focus of my testimony was on five Supreme Court decisions, all of them 5-4, in which the Supreme Court has been steadily wiping out campaign finance laws and bulldozing what I tried to describe as a wall of separation between plutocratic and corporate wealth in democratic elections. And that's a wall that we've been building for more than a century, going back to 1907 with the federal ban on corporate contributions to federal candidates. Now we've got a movement that was well represented yesterday in the Republican senators and also on the Supreme Court, represented by the conservative bloc of five justices, that takes the position that you can't regulate money at all. And so what we're facing now is not just Citizens United, which wiped out the prohibitions on corporate spending in politics, and, you know, not just the McCutcheon case, which took a sledgehammer to aggregate contribution limits, and not just the Arizona Free Enterprise Club case, which knocked down public finance programs to try to lift up poorer candidates so they could be heard over the roar of big money, but a movement to try to wipe out limits on the size of contributions and to wipe out the ban on corporate contributions directly to candidates. And my counterpart in the hearings, Floyd Abrams, essentially came out for that and said that he did not see any basis justifying any limits on money at all. Although, unlike a lot of the Republicans who are also opposed to disclosure laws now, he did say that he still favored disclosure. Although, you know, the purest position of the, free market ideologues on campaign finance is that disclosure laws themselves violate the First Amendment because they constitute coerced or compelled speech. It's like ordering the Jehovah's Witness kids to salute the flag against their will when you make someone report what their name and their occupation is along with their campaign contribution.
But don't you have to do that in any case when you aren't these in FCC filings for everybody?
Yeah, but understand what's going on now is a dismantling brick by brick of the whole edifice of campaign finance law. And what we heard from the Republicans yesterday was that all of it is a violation of free speech rights. Now, I try to demonstrate that this is a radical reversal in terms of American jurisprudence. I mean, you can go back to 1819 and find very definitive statements by Chief Justice John Marshall in the Dartmouth College case saying that a corporation is not a citizen or a collection of citizens. A corporation is an artificial entity chartered by the state legislature and invisible, intangible, existing only in contemplation of law, so not having any constitutional rights except for the rights that are deliberately given to it by the chartering entity. And because of that, we've been able to ban corporate spending for nearly a century, and we've been able to ban corporate contributions for more than a century. And the Supreme Court said, as recently as a decade ago in the McConnell decision, and before that in a case called Austin versus Michigan Chamber of Commerce, that corporations don't have political rights because they're endowed with limited liability of the shareholders, perpetual life of the corporation, all kinds of legal attributes that allow them to make a lot of money. And even the most conservative justices, like Justice White or Justice Rehnquist, said that they're given all these attributes, that it allows them to get real wealthy, and that's great because that's their role in society, but it would be very dangerous to allow them to turn around and spend that money in politics to further amplify their voice and to increase their own power and wealth. And in Citizens United, the Supreme Court simply wiped out that doctrinal understanding that goes back two centuries of what a corporation is and how corporate political intervention is a very dangerous thing in a political democracy. And so what we heard yesterday was the idea that corporations are just like people. They can spend all of this money that they amass through the corporate form to advance their views. And that's not only dangerous to the idea of one person, one vote democracy with political equality as the governing principle. It's also dangerous to a free market because now instead of telling businesses the best thing you can do is research and development and innovation and go out and compete Adam Smith style, like with a real free market, the best thing you can do is go spend money in political campaigns and then hire your lobbyists to follow through on it and come back with income tax breaks and corporate welfare and government subsidies. And so that's what we're getting, what economist Jamie Galbraith calls a predator state, where we've got these large corporate entities that are using political power in order to increase their wealth. And they're not interested in a free market, and they're definitely not interested in a political democracy founded on equality.
Again, I'm speaking with Jamie Raskin, a Democratic state senator in Maryland representing Silver Springs and Tacoma Park, as well as a professor of constitutional law at American University's Washington College of Law, where he directs its program on law and government and its Marshall Brennan Constitutional Literacy Project. On Tuesday, he testified before the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee in favor of a constitutional amendment to curb political spending. Now, doesn't the whole sort of DNA of this unraveling of campaign finance go back to Buckley v. Vallejo? And I think Floyd Abrams and others supported that. So did the ACLU at the time. Do you have to really go back and undo that? Didn't that lay the basis for money equals speech?
Well, understand that the Roberts Court has taken the Buckley versus Vallejo football and run all the way down the field with it. So they've taken it in an even much more extreme direction than it was. For example, in Buckley versus Vallejo, the court upheld the limits on aggregate contributions that someone could give. And now in this McCutcheon case, which I call Millionaires United, because it's only millionaires who benefit from it, you cannot be limited to giving just around $125,000 a year to members of Congress. You can give to every member of Congress and every member of Congress's opponent. So you can spend literally millions of dollars to buy up the political influence and access with everybody. That was not allowed under Buckley, and that's allowed under McCutcheon. Buckley was also much friendlier to public financing than the Citizens United Court is. It said as long as it's voluntary, it's okay. But the court just struck down a public finance plan in Arizona, which said that if a candidate accepts public financing and then is up against a privately financed candidate who goes way beyond him or her in terms of spending, then the limits the publicly financed candidate can get more money, up to three times what he or she was given originally. So generally, they start with around $25,000. They could get up to $75,000 if their opponent has, say, $250,000 or $1 million. And the Supreme Court struck that down, saying that violates the political free speech rights of the wealthier candidate because their speech is allowing someone else to speak, which I think exposes the whole fraud of this court's jurisprudence, because they started off with the proposition that, well, more money is always okay because it's just more speech. But if it's more speech that goes to a poorer candidate, then they think it's unconstitutional. It's a penalty on the speech of the rich. And so they're not interested in expanding the market in speech or political competition, as Justice Kagan said. They're interested in freezing political inequality and consolidating the power of the corporations and the CEOs who are making $20 or $30 or $40 million a year and are able to outspend everybody else. Now, and I don't think Americans begrudge people the right to get rich, but someone else's right to get rich doesn't mean that they've got the right to govern everybody else.
Well, Jamie Raskin, it would seem to me that given the low approval ratings of the Supreme Court and the sense that they are highly partisan, at least this five conservative majority, why do you think should we continue to see them as justices and jurists and not see them as political operatives? Because everything that they've done has been so transparently and so flagrantly partisan, and they've helped this tremendous partisan advantage. And my sense is that what the subtext here is that this is the way the Republican Party and the Republican establishment via the Supreme Court, whether in collusion or not, have decided that their future lies in unlimited money and doing voter suppression, and the Supreme Court has enabled them in both cases.
Well, I agree with that. We're living through a period of intense conservative judicial activism. I wrote a book about this called Overruling Democracy, the Supreme Court versus the American People, and it traces this conservative judicial intervention against democratic rights and against the political will of the people. And it, you know, one turning point was, of course, Bush versus Gore, where the Supreme Court, for the first time in American history, intervened in a presidential election to stop the counting of ballots and to blow the whistle and declare George W. Bush the victor. And then the Supreme Court that President Bush remade with his appointments a decade later comes to decide Citizens United, which tilts the entire political process in the direction of corporate power. So we have the president, who was the chosen favorite of the large corporations, appointing the justices who overthrow a couple of centuries of jurisprudence and many Supreme Court precedents, wiping out many federal and state laws, dozens of them, all in order to constitutionalize the political rights of corporations. And so, we're living in a moment of high peril for political democracy. And, I know there were people out there saying, well, this is just theater, because it's enormously popular to amend the Constitution, 75 or 80% of the people commanding majorities, not just of Democrats, but Republicans and independents, too. So it was being said, well, this is just political theater. They know the Republicans will never go along with it. In fact, I mean, it's a very serious business because most of the amendments that we've added to the Constitution since the Bill of Rights have been amendments that expand the voting rights of the people and deepen the meaning of political democracy, the vast majority of them. So, like the 15th Amendment struck down race discrimination in voting, the 17th Amendment shifted from state legislative selection of U.S. senators to popular election of senators, precisely because corporations were bribing state legislators and creating what was called, during the Gilded Age, corporation senators. They owed their office to corporations. You know, the 19th Amendment, women's suffrage, the 24th Amendment abolishing poll taxes, the 26th Amendment lowering the voting age to 18. You know, there's a trajectory of democratic development here. And this wall of separation that we've had in statute for more than a century between plutocracy and democracy is being wiped out by the Supreme Court. And this amendment would reclaim and restore the power of the people to keep big money out and to try to have some semblance of equality in our elections. Now, we know that billionaires are always going to be better positioned to contribute than everybody else. But it's one thing to tell the average American, you know, you've got a $100 contribution and, one of the Koch brothers has a $5,000 contribution. That's 50 to 1. It's quite another to say you've got a $100 contribution and they've got a $50 million contribution. Right, so that's 500,000 to one. I mean, well, what does that have to do with democracy? I mean, that's a statement of plutocracy where wealth gets to govern everybody else. And so, with the corporations, I want corporations to prosper and thrive and make lots of money within the bounds of law, but I don't want them to govern. And the Supreme Court has given us a jurisprudence that is threatening to turn everything upside down. And we're in the middle of it. And if we don't act, the people will not govern the corporations. The corporations will govern the people.
Well, curiously, that's what William Jennings Bryan said in the last Gilded Age, in the race against McKinley, that the greatest challenge in the 20th century, upcoming century, was to protect the God-made man from the man-made God, the corporation. And boy, was he prescient.
Yeah. Well, so, what's interesting about that, of course, is that, I mean, William Jennings Bryan started off as a very great figure who appealed to democratic populism in the country, and that movement fell apart over the question of race. And it took the civil rights movement in the 20th century to transform America over the race question and over civil rights. But the question of corporate power, was never resolved and has not been. And the Supreme Court, which has been a profoundly conservative force in American life for most of our history, has returned to its baseline. And it is a big champion of inequality and privilege and corporate power. And that's where we are now. And so, I'm really applauding the senators who have introduced this constitutional amendment and are trying to deal with this question while we still have the power to do it.
Well, Jamie Raskin, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Jamie Raskin, who's a Democratic state senator in Maryland, representing Silver Springs and Tacoma Park, as well as a professor of constitutional law at American University's Washington College of Law, where he directs the program on law and government and its Marshall Brennan Constitutional Literacy Project. On Tuesday, he testified before the United States Senate Judiciary Committee in favor of a constitutional amendment to curb political spending. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back talking about the real cost from the Snowden NSA leaks.